The Sales Performance Show, your source of inspiration in the world of sales and business development. Here we blend cutting-edge sales strategies with personal development. You'll hear from the experts to help unlock your true potential. And now, here's your host, David Slimer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Slimer. On this show today, we are going to be discussing lead generation and sales development. We have a guest who's a CEO and the best in his craft. He's a trailblazer. He's an entrepreneur, outside-the-box thinker. He's going to give you his philosophies, his ideas about lead generation. And I got to tell you, when I met this guy recently from one of our past guests, immediately I knew he had pace and purpose. He's a true leader. He knows what he's doing. So Brian Elias, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the invite.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for being here. So listen, for our guests, give them a little bit of history. You're a self-made guy, right? Talk to them a little bit of history about the companies you've had, and we're going to dig into the today's success and all that good stuff. But can you unpack that just a little bit?
Of course I can. I started off knocking on doors, working for somebody else, drumming up leads, because that's all I knew how to do. And after a while, I started selling for them, and I said, I can do this. So that's where I really left it. And from there, I said, well, I think I'm going to start my own company. So I started my own company, went to work. I did. My business was knocking on doors, and that's how I drummed up the business. And then I realized pretty quickly that if I'm knocking on doors, drumming up the business, selling the business, running the operation, the whole nine yards, I was going to have to hire people to replace myself. So that's exactly what I did. I hired people to replace myself. So the first thing I did was I was naturally charismatic, so it was easy for me to go out and knock on doors. But telling somebody else to go out and knock on doors was really hard. So I actually wrote the script. Hi, how you doing? Sorry to bother you. The reason why we're stopping by, I noticed you have the old replacement windows in your home. And wondering if you ever had a price on them yet. And using the word yet, sort of like said, you're going to be doing this sooner.
Right.
So I wrote that script. And then I practiced my own script and made sure that anybody could do it. So I really built a system where anybody could take that responsibility. And that's exactly what I went and did. And it's been a wild, wild ride ever since. So what I realized is in every area of your business, you must learn to replace yourself. And that's really the mission that I did. So we replaced ourselves and in every section. And I model myself after my favorite company in the whole world, which is McDonald's. Because it's not like they're using geniuses. Okay, or you know, college educated people or anything like that. What they've done is they built a system that is entirely operable by anybody. And that's the direction we've really gone. And I've had a riot doing that.
So great. And I come from that same deal. I started my first business knocking on doors. And after time, I knew that the only way that I was going to be able to grow it is if I could lay down a foundation like you're talking about here. And something, and listen, we're going to talk about this a little bit, but I didn't realize in the beginning that say the other professionals weren't me. And that was really hard for me. So I was expecting them to operate like me, do it like me. And then I soon realized that people can't do it. And you got to make it a little, you got to make it, easier for them to digest and then bring it out. So you made a good point on that.
And I realize that you have to just sort of dumb it down for everybody. You have to create a system that works. I mean, you know, nobody at McDonald's knew how to cook a burger. They have a system to teach you. Nobody knew how to take an order. They have a system to teach you. In fact, that person who works at McDonald's, if you think about it, they're also a salesman, because what happens is you'll order a quarter pounder with cheese, french fry, and a Coke, and, you know, immediately on the screen, it's telling them, offer them an apple pie. Would you like to try an apple pie for just $1 more? All of a sudden, that's $1 billion.
Right.
Just by changing the script. So that to me is really the advantage of the whole process thing. So I'm very process driven, and to make sure that our processes outperform any people. Yes. So there's no job that we have in our company below leadership that we couldn't train somebody to do with the right skill set.
Right. Right.
And your KPIs, right? I mean, I know you're a guy, you're just like me. You've got to know the KPIs. You've got to know where you are and whether it's going good or whether it's not going good or going bad. You have to know where to put pressure. And
I'm going to give you my secret sauce in three sentences.
Okay.
Rule number one, where are you at now? Yep. Rule number two, where are you going? Rule number three, how are you going to get there? So if any problem that you have, it could be in your marriage, it could be in your business, where you at now? What people always want to do is go to number two without looking at number one. If they can't tell you where you're at now, you can't move on to number two until you know where you're at. So people say, how much, you know, how do I get appointments? Well, what's your marketing cost? Well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know your marketing cost, you can't figure out where you're going and what's working and what's not. So, and if you have a bad marriage, it's the same thing. Where are you at with your marriage? Is this your best friend? Do you treat them like your best friend? Where are you going? Well, I want to have a great marriage. How are you going to get there? Well, I'm going to do something nice for my wife every single day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, man.
And so if you live by those three sentences, it really makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. And listen back to that. It's so simple. It really is. But yet, so if you break those down, it'll give you some great direction and really focus on the pillars of what's going to make an impact, whether it's personally or professionally. I really, really enjoy that. Talk to me about lead generation. Okay, let's pivot just a little bit as we go over this. I know you're huge into this, and this is how you've built the companies you have. But talk to me about you know, how you define lead generation.
Well, let's start off with what we do know. If you don't have a customer or a potential customer, you're going to be out of business. So people always ask me, what industry are you in? Or what do you sell? And to me, I'm the industry that I'm in is I'm in the new business. I'm not in the flooring business. I wasn't in the replacement window business. I'm in the new business. And if people don't realize they're in the new business, they'll be out of business very quickly. So your business has got to be, how are you going to continue to acquire new customers? And that's what we do every day. And people are like, well, I want to go for word of mouth. Okay. I call that hoping and praying. Okay. If you have to hope and pray, you're out of business. You can't depend on luck. You can't depend on the tide carrying you. So you have to say, how am I going to get new business every single day inside of the funnel? And that's what we focus on.
That's great. What is your strategy, man? You're saying you focus on it. So if you've got someone who's listening right now and they really, I've heard it too. I've been in the marketing advertising space for years. Yeah, I depend on word of mouth. You know, it's you've got to get people in the door. And
every business has things that work for them. So it could be, let's use TV for the fun of it.
Yep.
TV is a very expensive, but very effective lead. So if I spend $3,000 on TV and I got 10 customers that raised their hand saying, hey, I'm interested, it cost me $300 for that interested party. If my average order is, let's call it $10,000, that means I have a 3% marketing cost, depending on if I sold them all, which I won't, but that's irrelevant.
Right.
So you have to know what your score was. So I know for $3,000, I can get 10 appointments. Does that mean if I spend $20,000, I could get, if I spend $6,000, I could get double the appointments? In theory, until you get to the point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Which does happen. So knowing where you're at and how to get your appointments and what they cost you is something you have to be measuring every single day of your life. Because you have to recognize, it's more important to recognize what's not working than what is working. Because advertising can be the, you know, the bane of your existence. You can run out of money in no time.
Yes.
So I tell a story all the time, and I'm going to tell the story to you, and you can take it for what it's worth. A guy, when I first started in business, a guy decided he was going to come in my office and sell me on a concept, which sounded great at the time. Okay. He goes, where do you do your work? I said, in this Warren, Michigan, which is a city. He says, okay. He says, where do your customers shop? I said, oh, they shop at the Kroger, which is a chain here in Michigan. Right,
yep.
Okay. So where do you shop? I said, well, the customers shop at Kroger. He goes, exactly. He says, take a look at the back of this register receipt. We can make sure that every single one of your customers sees your brand on the back of the register receipt. And I go, wow, what a great idea. Brilliant. And he says, on top of that, I'm going to give you the exclusive. You'll be the only window and siding company on the back of the receipt. He says, so they'll get other coupons, yeah, but none of them are competing with you. I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Okay. And at that time, it was $1,000 a month, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it was.
Yeah.
For me at that time, it was a lot of money. So literally, I hired people to man the phones. And so day one, he says, you're on. You're all set. So we're waiting by the phone and nothing's happening. I'm like, maybe their registers still have the old receipts in it and they haven't cleared them all out yet. I just don't understand. So being the entrepreneur that I am, I went to the store, bought something at the store. And I thought, well, that should work. So I looked and there I was right on the back of the receipt, just like they promised. And what I realized after 2 weeks and no phone calls is that's not how the consumer consumes information or uses advertising. And I realized that if you don't pick the right advertising, you're making a mistake. So things like park benches. I've never made a phone call off of a park bench. Neither is my customer. Receipts, no good. Placement mats in restaurants, no good. Again, those are things that just don't cut it. And you have to think like that. What does or doesn't work? And that's what I found.
Yeah.
And so you have to go to where people are trained to buy from. They're trained to buy from TV. They're trained to buy off of Google. They're becoming trained on different social media like TikTok. So these are becoming the newer things. They're trained for direct mail. You got a direct mail piece that comes to your mailbox. You don't need your carpet clean. My wife just grabbed one yesterday. We need our carpet clean. She opened up the envelope, grabbed the first carpet cleaner she saw. And she wasn't even looking for a deal. She was just looking for a customer. So you have to understand how the consumers can stew.
Yeah.
And you have to say, have you ever bought that way before? If you've never bought that way, your customer's most likely not going to buy that way.
Yeah.
So I tell that story to remind people to advertise in the right place. Go where your competitors are. Don't try to be the pioneer and try to figure out where you're the newest, greatest thing.
Yeah.
Because that's like hoping and praying.
It's funny, man. This is the space I've lived in for 25 years. And it is so true. The avenues, the biggest thing you're saying here is that you have to track it. That's the biggest thing that you're saying right here. Because listen, there's some avenues where it may have worked for some of those types of programs. But in your world, you've been, like you said, in the siding space. Now you're in the flooring space at this point. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how you've scaled those companies, at least your first company, and the path of growth that you're on for this company right now that you, after your 1 minute of retirement.
Yeah, I retired. I sold my company to a private equity firm for more money than I ever dreamed of. and said, okay, I'm retired. Well, I'm not really good at being retired, but truth be told, I had all my eggs in one basket, which was that business. My parents died young. So that said, I'm like, well, I want to make sure I have a nest egg for my wife, for my kids, things like that. And the business was worth more with me alive than, God forbid, something happened. So I wanted to basically flip it for cash, which I did, the majority. I still sit on a board for them, and they're great people. And that said, I just wanted to make sure that I'm building my future. Then I had the opportunity after that to go into the flooring space. I actually hired the CEO at my window company. I hired the former CEO of Empire Today. And he's the guy who replaced me. And he and I became friends. He said, Brian, he goes, why don't you try flooring? He says, it doesn't violate your non-compete. He said, it's a very similar business. I said, you know, it's not a bad idea. Ask my son if he wanted to do the business with me. Mm-hmm. He said, yes. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. And that's what I did. So I'm definitely, no question about it, the fastest growing flooring company in the nation. We started 4 years ago at zero. We didn't do any acquisitions. We opened up what they call greenfield locations, which is new locations. Yeah, new locations. And I think we're in our 12th or 13th market right now.
And this has been how many years? 4 or 5 years?
4 years. Four years. And that's our goal, is to continue and build across the country. And there's no reason my competitor is close to $1 billion. I want to catch them. Yeah. And by the way, I wish them the very best. Nice people.
Yeah.
I've reached out to all of my competitors. We've built relationship. We're all friends and friendly with each other. They have a problem with me, they're going to pick up the phone and call me. I feel the same way about them. I wish them well. And there's plenty of business out there for everybody. If I'm going to win, they don't have to lose. We all can win.
Yeah.
Big world. I'd rather have a competitor than not have a competitor.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, that's the competition really helps businesses grow. And I always encouraged competition, especially being in the space I was. I mean, we had in the direct mail marketing, digital print space. I mean, we had so many competitors. But if you truly believe that you can do it better than anybody else, then that's the real key. And it's good for healthy competition. So to be able to scale the company you have right now, the way that you as quickly as you've grown, lead generation, as we talked about, what are your components of your formula? I mean, you talked about it earlier, to really market in spaces where consumers are going to buy or have a pattern to buy. Any other thing you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's real important that we talk about messaging. I think this is where a lot of people make mistakes. I'll read advertisements as early as today, where all the companies are talking about is themselves. We've been in business for 20 years. Our location is at so-and-so. Thousands of satisfied customers. So they're talking about themselves. Okay, their picture of them and their entire family on the ad. Nobody gives a shit about your family. Nobody cares about your kids. They don't care how long you've been in business. They want to know what's in it for me. They want to know, what are they going to get? What problem are we solving? So if you're not solving their problem, your ad is irrelevant. Your dog in the picture, however cute, the best thing that can happen is that they look at the ad and they go, oh, I'll look further. But if it's just the dog, that's not enough. The message has got to be, you have ugly floors. You want them gone, and you want it gone asset-free. That's where we come in. So I'm focused on the problem that the customer is having and showing them that I am the best solution for them. But if you're talking about your family, your dog, your ego, how long you've been doing it, you know, how many customers you have, how big your house is, whatever nonsense, mom doesn't care about that. Mom's not stupid. Mom knows exactly what she wants to protect her family. And I focus my energy on mom's needs. And if you focus your energy on mom's needs, you can grow a business that serves mom. If you focus your energy on what your friends might say to you, oh, I saw your ad. that's really cool. Oh, you brought your family on there. That's beautiful. That is not going to get you more appointments. So I see this all the time. So I have four steps that I use in every piece of advertising. Interrupt, I get their attention. Engage, I make sure I engage them to whatever their problem that they're having. Then I educate them. And then I place an offer they can't refuse. So those are the four steps that I use in every form of advertising that I do. And sometimes I merge one and two, meaning interrupt, engage. Okay? Tired of ugly floors, you got their attention and you engage them.
I love it, man. I love it. I'm so aligned with you because I train sales professionals across the country in a number of different spaces. And I say the same thing. They don't give a shit about you. They give a shit about what challenges you can tackle for them, how you do it, what makes you different.
Right.
And that's the deal. Right. I mean,
and, how you're gonna and you're competing for their dollars. Okay. So if you want them to buy a floor, okay, and their furnace is going bad, the furnace is going to win. So you're chasing out their disposable income. So you got to be right in their face saying, hey, your floors come first. Before buying furniture, get new floors.
Yeah.
That's the foundation that all furniture sits on. So you have to talk to them and you have to figure out how to maneuver to the top of their shopping list. And that's what we do every day.
That's great. That's great. Have you ever done anything unconventional where you're like, man, I'm going to try it. Listen, I'm going to gamble on it and think, this thing's probably going to flop. And it worked out. Was there anything that you've tried that's kind of, you've been like, damn, all right, I didn't think that was going to pay off, but it did.
Yeah. Something called Google. Okay, when I first started and the people were like, all the people were out there, I'm like, this is going to be the way of the world. And I saw it coming and I did that. And that's one of the things. Other things is asking people for referrals. If you don't ask, you won't get them. And you have to make that part of your process. So what happens is people send a letter, hey, refer me to your friends. That's not enough. You've got to really engage them. Hey, I have a question for you. If you don't mind, can I get a couple of referrals from you? I'll take their names right now and I'll give them a call and see if they're interested in getting new flooring. If you ask the questions properly and you wait for the answer, you grow. If you just send an email, hey, send me your referrals, nothing's going to come.
Spray and pray.
Right. Spray and pray is not a strategy.
No.
It's dreaming. It's wishing. Yeah. And I've never wished myself into success ever yet.
Mm-hmm. Do it. Never wished myself into any act. Just there's always a quote or something in a podcast that I pick up. And I love that one. So rewind that one. If you're listening to this, that is a great way to go by things for sure. Especially professionally, personally, the matter.
You know, and people who go into business, I like to give this reminder. Your business is not supposed to be your life. Your business is supposed to give you more life. Okay? So if you're living your business and you can't do anything else, you don't have a business, you have a job. And you're not looking for a job. I'm sitting here talking to you right now. My business is running whether I'm talking to you or not because I have all the processes and systems in place so I can be here talking to you and know that my business is functioning. And I'd like to believe that it functions better with me there, but not that much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to touch on this question because it's for years I was doing in the weeds, building the businesses. And now I have this outside in approach where I do a lot of consulting work and it is a different perspective, which I really enjoy. When you're a charismatic CEO running a company like you, you have this vision and you're growing quickly. And I don't know how many employees do you have within your system?
100.
Right.
100.
Okay.
300, 350. I'm guessing.
What do you think is the most important element for your, okay, you have a vision of how you want this company to run. And if you were on the streets right now and you were talking with somebody, you would have a dialogue and the way that you would want to do it. And I'm sure you translate that down to your team. But how do you make sure that that gets translated for the people who are on the front lines leading the charge, delivering it the way and your vision and how you want it done to a point where it's, you know, the reason why you want it done the way you want it done is because you get, you know, the results are going to be there. When you grow an organization that big, how do you make sure that that doesn't get watered down and get lost?
So I'm gonna give it to you real simply.
Okay.
There's actually four steps. Number one, what is your strategy? Number two, what are your processes? Number three, who are your people that are running those processes? And number four, data. And when I say data, you have to measure everything to see how you're doing. So if you know you're getting better and getting worse.
Yes.
So if you think to yourself, how do you get that information to your team? You have to write your strategy. Everybody has to know what your strategy is. My strategy right now is to build the most trusted flooring company in America. That is our strategy. Okay. Which will in turn make me the largest flooring company in America. So how do you become the most trusted? You live a set of values that make you the most trusted. So that's my mission. That's my strategy.
Great.
And people don't have to have as lofty as a goal as I do. I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it for the fun of it.
Right.
I want to build something that no one else has built. I actually legally work for my 27-year-old son, who's brilliant. And I'm his employee. And we set it up that way because, you know, for all intents and purposes, I've made enough money in my career that I don't need more. I want to work with him and have him have the same joy that I had of building something really big. And this will be bigger than what I built. And so strategy, process, people, data. And if you just can remember those four things. So when I start to say to you, what's your strategy? You know, you're in your business. What's your strategy to get more customers or more clients for your consulting? You have to have a strategy. What's your plan? How are you going to do it? Well, I assume one of the things you're going to do is you're going to have these podcasts out there that's going to say, hey, I'm your guy.
It's going to say you're sitting on one. Right.
I mean, that's what it's for. So you have to have a strategy on how you're going to do that. You can't be everything to everybody.
Yeah, that's the truth. You cannot be everything to everybody. That is the truth.
So
that's great.
To me, you have to look in the mirror and say, okay, what's my plan? And does everybody know my plan? You don't have it in writing. You don't commit to writing. You don't have anything. You got a wish.
Yeah.
You have a dream.
Putting it down is 50% of it, maybe even more, but you've got to put it down. You have to put it on paper. You have to put it, you can't have it just a process in your head. And again, that's the translation we're talking about. That's a real key component. So I want to make sure we touch or really hit that on the head.
So if you know, your strategy has to be known and owned by all. So when you hire a person, you're going to take them and you're going to talk to them about your strategy from day one. And you're going to continue to talk to your team about it from day one. So what we do is in every department, we say, okay, our mission is to become the most trusted flooring company in America. How is my installation department going to handle that? How is my marketing department going to handle that? How is my IT department going to handle that? How is my HR department going to handle that? So you got to hire the right people, all of those things. And you have to hire to your core values. I'm going to tell you our core values. I know them by heart. We use an acronym called RESPECT. R stands for responsible. That means you own it. E stands for enterprising. That means you'll figure it out if there's a problem. Okay. S stands for system driven. I don't want people solving new things in new ways. Follow the process every single time, just like McDonald's does. P stands for positive. I don't want any Karens working for me. I don't want mean people around me. I want to work with the most positive people I can find. Okay. The next E stands for empathetic. You actually have to care how other people feel.
Yeah.
C stands for customer focus. And our customers are not just our regular customers. They're our installers, they're our salespeople. Those are all of our customers. And T stands for team player. You must play nicely with other people in the sandbox. So when I interview people, and all my managers are interviewing people, we have that respect word out on the table, and we're literally during the interview going through each one of those letters to see if that person meets our core values. If they're a negative on any one of the seven letters or words, we don't hire that person because we want a bunch of like-minded people working for us, even if they're good. So a lot of people listening to this are going to have what I call the office bitch who works for them, who's nasty to everybody but knows her shit. She needs to go. And by the way, it could be a guy with the same problem. You need to make sure that you're building the people around you and you're with people that meet your core values. Because if they don't, you're only as good as your weakest link inside of your culture.
It's so true. And listen, high performers don't like working with mediocre people. Mediocre people don't like working with high performers. A players don't like working with C players, and C players don't like working with B. It's just when you start really getting the people in the system that are really aligned on that A play, they really enjoy working together because they get challenged and they grow, and it's a healthy environment. And it's not always perfect, but I will tell you that when you really align a room with A players, the momentum just goes so quickly.
I'm gonna give you a different take on what you said, and I'm gonna make you think for a moment.
Yeah,
I don't hire A players intentionally. In fact, I just hire for attitude. I'd much rather have a bunch of B players with the right attitude.
Okay,
and do without the A player arrogance. So I told you before, I follow McDonald's. How many McDonald's employees would you say are A players?
Right.
Not very, very many. Little. Okay. But what they do is they follow the process. And every time I pull up at McDonald's, the majority of the time, hi, welcome to McDonald's. Can I place your order? So they're following the process so well that the ordinary people can get extraordinary results. And that's what I focus on, is the ordinary. So I don't find it difficult to find talent because I'm hiring for attitude and training for skill. Now, will I build superstars? Yes. Will I build those A players? Yes. Do I look for experienced people in flooring? I don't. I look for experience and attitude. I'll teach them flooring. That's the easy part.
No, I agree with it. Listen, I do agree with that A player mentality. There's people who may have not had the right opportunities, but you and I have been in business long enough that we can tell when we can move somebody into an A player role. And you and I both know this. It's not about your skill set and your knowledge, because that can all be taught. What comes down to is work ethic and attitude. I mean, because if you got an A player who has a shitty attitude, well, that's not an A player to me. That's a C player, to be honest with you. So
hire for attitude, train for skill.
Yeah.
Teach him your process. Teach him your system. I want 10 forms of advertising out there. I'm going to measure how each 10 are working. I'll see how much it costs per appointment for each one of those. And that's what we measure every single solitary day.
So good, man. Just a lot of work.
And if you think about it, you know, my business is just basically like an airplane. You got X amount of seats on the airplane. And what I got to do is I got to fill those seats every single solitary day. So that, because once that plane goes out, you're done. So if you didn't sell the seats, you have openings, and that means you lost money. If you can come close to filling that plane, you know, everything over and above a certain amount, it all goes to the bottom line. And that's the direction that we think. That's how we think.
Yeah. I want to pivot here a little bit more into sales, okay? Because lead generation is, you could have all the lead generation in the world, but if you can't have, if you don't have a strong sales team to execute on that, it's all for naught. So how do you balance? Because I've seen organizations, I'm not saying that this is in your organization, but I've seen them where, you know, marketing people are saying, well, I want, say, we're doing the marketing and the salespeople need to do better. Or the salespeople are going, you know what? We need better marketing. right? There's always that balance in there. How have you been able to maximize that? And I think it comes back to a lot of philosophies you mentioned, but you know, what's your strategy and some of your focus on that?
Main thing is just to train the people that anybody who raises their hand and says, hey, I am interested in getting a price on a floor, that is a great lead.
Great lead.
It's my job to figure out how to sell that. So we have, as a sales rep, your job is to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you are the company to do business with. I'm going to repeat that one more time. Mm-hmm. Your job is to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you're the company to do business with and you're the person to do business with. So if you think of it like that, it makes it easy. And the nice thing about sales that's not allowed in the courtroom, because that's where that saying comes from, is you're allowed to lead the witness in sales. You're not allowed to lead the witness, okay, in court. And the reason why is it's so powerful. That's why people don't take the stand in their own defense, because leading a witness is real easy. It's just a series of asking questions, isn't it? And I can force you to answer questions just by asking them. You know, you like what I'm telling you so far, don't you? I can control the conversation with my question. So that's the power of sales, is asking questions and asking the right questions.
Yes.
So I'll give an example. You walk into a retail store. Salesperson walks up to you and says, what?
How can I help you?
And what do you always say? No,
I'm just looking.
Right. And everybody says that. So why do you suppose they ask such a stupid question if they already know what the answer is going to be? Because they were poorly trained. They're talking about themselves instead of talking about the customer. Hi, how you doing? Did you hear about the sale we're having? Yes or no? Doesn't matter what the answer is.
Oh, no, I have not.
Great. Let me show you what's on sale. You thinking tops or bottoms?
I'm going to go tops.
Okay. Well, let me take you over the top, show you what's on sale and show you the things that are not on sale, and then see what we can find that, you know, will pique your interest. Fair enough. And that's so by changing the question, you change the answer.
There it is.
So if you're not liking the results that you're getting, you got to change you. You can't change the customer. There's no such thing as a bum territory. There's a bum in the territory. Okay. and you might be the bum. But the sooner that you recognize that when you don't sell somebody, it's not the lead's fault, it's your fault, the better you get.
That one hit me. I've never heard that one, but I'm going to take it eventually. But that was a really good one.
I like to think that I barely graduated high school and never finished college. I was brought into college on probation. I dropped out of college. So I'm self-taught. I didn't read a book till I was 35 years old, ever. Not a single novel, nothing. I got through just by common sense, listening, and that's it. So I'm not educated. I'm self-taught.
Yep.
And I make it my business to learn something new every day. And the reason why I'll do podcasts for people like this is because I learned a ton along the way. And if I could help somebody's road be better and easier, that's my goal.
We are so aligned, because I was self-taught too out in the street. And I had some good mentors too. I mean, I had some people who guided me and helped me. But if there's one thing that you can do as a professional who's out there, is pay attention to your questions. And I think that goes back to what you just talked about. The more engaging questions you ask, the more engaged you're going to get your potential customer. So let me ask you this question, though, because you've worked with a lot of sales professionals through the years, okay? You and I both, we've seen some really good ones. We've seen ones that have great talent who wasted it. We saw some that maybe didn't have as much talent but were super successful. What do you think maybe one or two key elements that separate a great sales professional versus a mediocre or below average sales professional?
Okay. There's two ingredients that make great salespeople. Number one is ego. Second is drive. So I want you to imagine for a moment you got four different columns. One is a big E, big D, which stands for big ego, big drive. Mm-hmm. One has little ego, big drive. One has big ego, little drive. Okay. And one has little drive, little ego.
Okay.
And so what you do is you take your salespeople that work for you and you ask yourself, which one of those four columns do they belong in? Your best salespeople are obviously the ones with the big ego, big drive. Mm-hmm. They're also your pain in the ass. That would be a guy like me. I have a big ego. I got big drive. Okay. I'm going to go off on my own. Okay. And that's okay. The next one is a superstar for you. He's got a small ego and he's got big drive and he's going to work his butt off every day. Okay. You want as many of those as you can get.
Yeah.
The nightmare is the third one, okay, which is big ego and no drive. They can do it when they want to do it, but they don't want to do it. They like sitting out, resting on their laurels. Those are the ones you have to really watch out for. And the last column, if you hire them as a salesperson, you're an idiot, because if they have little ego and little drive, they don't belong on your team. So those are the things that I look for when I'm hiring salespeople.
It's great. Great perspective, great way to really be in tune with somebody who you're interviewing and evaluating that. Love it. I love it.
So I use something out of EO. I don't know if you know what EOS is. It's Entrepreneurial Operating System. If you haven't read the word book Traction, you need to read it. But they have a theory that they use. It's called get it, want it, and have the capacity to do the work. So you have to take a look at your people. Do they get it? Do they understand it? Yes, they do. Do they want it? 50-50. You don't know. You got to talk to them, see if they want it. And do they have the capacity to do the work? I'll give you an example. My accountant, he understands sales. He's super sharp. That said, he's got the capacity, but he doesn't want it because he's not wired for sales.
Yeah.
He's wired to do books. No different than I understand accounting very well, but I am not wired to do accounting. So I don't necessarily have that capacity and I don't want it. So those are the things you have to think about when you're hiring each person.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit about that when we connected about the EOS system. And I've worked with some organizations who run it really, really well. And I also worked with some organizations who just have a really tough time executing on it the right way. But it's a great system. Yep.
It is a good system. And if you're not driving the system properly and you're changing the rules as you go, there's no point in using the system if you're going to change the system.
That's true.
The system is designed to help you do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all my businesses now, I'm EOS. So
you're recommend it. Yeah.
All in.
It's great. Well, listen, we're going to wrap up here, but I really want to ask you this question before we go. What advice would you give a business looking to improve their lead generation, their sales efforts, maybe on a more limited budget? Someone who's listening here is not at that scale where they can just test things out, but more on a limited budget. What kind of advice would you give somebody?
Unfortunately, that is my advice, which is to test things out.
Yeah.
When I go to a new market, before I even open the door there, I'll run an ad there under my brand with everything. And just, you know, when I get phone calls, I go, oops, oh, I'm so sorry. We haven't opened there yet. They accidentally ran the ad. But it'll tell me how many appointments I can get. So I test the market before I ever go in it.
Into it.
I'd rather spend $4,000 or $5,000 and test the market than spend $50,000 to find out I was wrong.
Yep.
So test everything. Test it out. If it doesn't work, don't fall in love with your own ideas. Fall in love with the numbers. If the numbers say it works, do it. If the numbers say it fails, don't do it.
Yeah. It's a good point. And also know what it's going to take for you to get a return on the investment, based on the investment, right? I mean, every business is different. If you're selling pizza, it's a smaller ticket item. If you're doing flooring, it's a bigger ticket item. So you have to know what it's going to take for you to make money.
And a lot of times people are undercharging for their services.
Yeah.
They don't realize what it costs. So, you know, I'll talk to people who are in flooring and they got a job cost of $5,000 and they'll sell it for $8,000. And they don't realize that that'll put themselves out of business because there's not enough money there. They're going, I made $3,000. No, you didn't. You're in trouble because you don't have the margins to go to get all the way to the bottom line.
Yeah.
And people need to realize that their business is to stay in business, and they have to make sure at the end of everything, it's all about what's left after you pay everybody. It's not about how much, I sold $8,000. No, you only made $3,000, of which you had expenses of $3,500. So you have effectively lost $500. But if you don't know your numbers, back to my three questions, where are you at, where are you going, how are you going to get there? You must know where you're at.
Yeah. Wow, it's funny how that came all full circle, because you have to know your true acquisition costs when it comes to anything like that. But that's great, man. Listen, I have enjoyed this a lot. And I think what we should do is I want to come back and check in with you in some time.
And anytime you'd like.
And see how you're progressing and be on top of the chain of that business, which the flooring business, which is a big one. Do you see any changes coming up in that business as we go along? No, I
just think that how people do business is going to change. This AI is going to change the world, just like Google did. And you'll need less people to do a lot more things. I mean, I'm imagining one day that a consumer will be able to pick up their phone, take a picture of their room, okay? Yeah. And it'll figure out everything that job needs. So I think AI is going to be a game changer in so many things that we haven't even thought about. I think it's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, for anybody listening up, you got to wrap your – it's not going anywhere. You got to wrap your mind around it. And it's the people who don't understand AI or understand how to execute on it or be involved in that are ones that are going to get pushed aside. So understand it. And listen, it's a complex thing. I mean, it's amazing, but it's also a little bit scary too, to see where this thing might go as well.
It's funny because, you know, I've done recordings and things like that where I'll take the recording and I'll play it back to AI and have things of mine reworded, and it words it better than I can.
No, totally. Totally. Have you heard of that company called Air? I mean, I'm not promoting them or anything, but so check this out. I get this. I can't remember when it was on. I don't know. It could have been Instagram or something like that, or maybe it was an email, or I don't remember. But they send me this recording of somebody taking in a phone call, and the person is asking questions as if, you know, hey, I'm interested in some flooring. Boom. They're just, it's like they're having a conversation. It was all AI.
Yep.
It was 100%. All AI. And I was talking to another CEO about a month ago who was trying it, and it was very early, so I don't know what the results were. Now, I don't think they're there for outreach, like to outreach cold, which eventually will come. But it was scary on how the voice was AI voiced, but it sounded like you and I talking. It was unbelievable to me.
Yeah, and that's the future. That's the future, guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's where the world's going.
Yeah. Listen, man, I want to thank you again for being on the show. Great guest. And where can people find you? If they have questions for you, want to reach out or just connect with you? I know you're a guy who helps out all the time.
Happy to help.
Yeah.
I'm easy to find on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Under Brian Elias. Help yourself. My cell number is 248-866-2000. Feel free to send me a text.
Great guy. Great guy. He is a true pro, this guy. And I want to thank you all for listening to the show today. Check us out at salesperformance.com. Like the show, share it, and we will see you next time.
Take care of yourself.
Thanks.